This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Hey folks, it's Jake Miller from The Drive, and Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code 20DRIVE. That's 20DRIVE at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, that's about 8 million balls.
You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
Think nobody in here, like we would just be ready to go right at three. Instead, it's just a mad scramble.
We sat out there and just talked about, I can't even tell you what we talked about other than
nothing important,
just
nothing
hammering Hickman.
You yelled at me, you yelled at him.
Where is
you yelled at Marcus?
I'd be scurried out of here with his tail between his legs
into the mist. All right,
it's time to go to work. Hickman disappeared.
Bears already messed up. The show hasn't even started.
Well, you messed up too, dude.
The rare mess. No, I had a minor screw up in my insult of you for messing up. I called you Timberlake instead of Timberland. That's very minor as opposed actually playing something over the air. One of our drops. We're supposed to be testing something off the air. Anyway.
You don't want to hear that.
Anyway. We get into it this afternoon, Thursday afternoon edition of The Drive. Russell Smith punching the time clock. And still no baseball.
Nope.
All right, let's.
It's good to have you back, boss, in studio with us.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. Good to see the new guy, too, Brett. Brett's quiet.
We've gone over this.
He needs to, maybe we have to light him up or something, see if we can't get under his skin, elicit a reaction.
Well, he doesn't have a microphone in front of him.
That's a good point. All right. What am I doing? I'm looking for Hoova on the app. Let's go. Oh, we're going to get rain here. Are you seeing this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're getting pulverized.
Really? Oh, my God. I had no idea. I wouldn't have worn my nice New Balance if I'd known that. That's how you know you're getting old, when you make your choice of shoes according to what the weather's going to be. Do you do that, Miller?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, cool.
It's like if it's raining, I'm wearing rubber boots.
Rubber boots?
Yeah, if I've got to work. If not, I'm just wearing tacos.
My least favorite tinnies. All right, so it's raining right now in Hoova.
Did you say tinnies?
Mm-hmm.
Two observations here.
Okay.
Kind of weird to say tinnies. The other thing is you can tell Russell's never worked outside for a living.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. That's true. But
I was like, Jake, makes perfect sense, man. If it's going to pour rain, you work outside, you're wearing.
I was listening to a Ricky Gervais stand-up set last night, and he goes, "When I'm sometimes when I walk by construction guys, I try and act more working class than I really am." I was like, I so identify with that.
Dude, so funny.
You're walking down the street, and all of a sudden you see some guys up on some scaffolding. Hey, oh, what's up, fellas?
He had a bit. It may be in the same special. I mean, if you watch it, about different breeds of dogs and what their jobs are and when they let them know.
I haven't seen that one.
That's
I was listening as I drifted off to sleep, so I don't know. It might have been. Anyway, 80% chance of thunderstorms in Hoover for the 3 p.m. hour, and it's supposed to be clear starting at 4. So if this weather app is correct, looks like they could play baseball maybe starting around 4. And they said the game that's supposed to be going on now, they were hoping to start at 2, which obviously hasn't happened. So let's say, and in that scenario, we were supposed to start around 6. So if we're pushing it back another 2 hours, maybe we play tonight at 8 p.m.-ish?
Tonight?
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, I fully expect us to start at like 10 p.m. That is a grass field, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See what the latest from
Tennessee. I wonder what shape Twitter the field's is. In now.
As of 38 minutes ago, Tennessee baseball Twitter account says baseball will be played today, approximately 7 p.m. SEC Network. Hashtag beat Vandy. Vandy boys! By the way, I know everybody's really frustrated this whole situation, but I got to say, just as what we do, just pure self-interest, this actually works out really well.
Fantastic for us.
Because it was really going to suck if we had played at 5:30 yesterday. I mean, that would have eaten into the end of our show, but so that doesn't happen. It was really going to suck for us. Like, I don't know what we've done. If they had started our game at 2 today and we were playing
we wouldn't have been able to do a show.
We would just done a watch party somewhere, I guess.
Probably a watch party and then post game. Do the VR thing.
But I mean, I get,
hate it when games are during our show.
Yeah, I'd rather just do the show.
Yeah.
Let's keep to a normal schedule. And as far as like what's best for our baseball team, I don't know at this point, man. Single elimination, cancel the whole darn thing, squeeze them all in on the weekend. Like, I don't know.
I think it may have been after you took off yesterday. I don't care about this weekend.
I guess the one thing you don't want, I don't want to play twice on Sunday.
Huh.
You want to avoid that. You don't want to play you don't want to use two starting pitchers on Sunday because that limits your options for the regional. And Sankey and the powers that be have to know that. I mean, I'm sure we're not the only school. I'm sure A&M and Arkansas, LSU, the other good schools are pushing for that as well.
Would think that any team that's not needing to win two games on Sunday to make it into the tournament, I think that's what they're all telling Sankey. I mean, Sankey has to know that. I mean, he can't. However, the SEC tournament plays out with what they've got left, what they can't do is put SEC schools into a disadvantaged position going into our regionals next weekend. That's just no good for the conference. Am I wrong? So I think there's no way. I mean, I may be wrong.
You often are.
Occasionally, I'm known to be. But if I'm Sankey, I'm like, look, teams that are going in the tournament, they're not going to use two pitchers on Sunday. You're not going to play twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I would assume that point has been made, but you never know. We'll see. It's crazy what's going on down there right now. All right, we got a lot of basketball news today, and let's start here locally. How about that?
Let's.
Bear, you put this on my radar earlier this week. Big shakeup here locally. Blue Kane.
Yeah.
From Catholic is headed to IMG in Florida. OMG. Blue Kane to IMG.
It's really not for me. I knew that.
That's a huge hit for your basketball program, bro. You're losing BJ Edwards and Blue Kane?
And Mike Hutchins retired.
Dude. I mean, Hutch is gone for like a month, and the whole program is just falling apart.
It means Godfather Knoxville High School basketball. I'm trying to remain calm.
Two big kids, like he's still going to be very good. But so his deal, I mean, obviously he's good, and he's just trying to up his recruiting profile a little bit. Maybe Tennessee not exactly beating down his door. Is there a similarity between the kid Tennessee got today, Cade Phillips, who we're going to talk about here in just a second, Alabama legacy kid, grew up in the heart of Alabama. I know that the Blue Kane's not a Tennessee legacy kid, but he played at Catholic here. He's from Knoxville. And the story is that Alabama did not go hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tennessee did. And it feels like Rick Barnes is not going hard after Blue Kane.
I don't know anything, but I kind of get the same impression.
Now, he's a rising junior. He's got plenty of time to blow up and make Tennessee.
Like I know that, you know, Forbes he's Forbes' top target at Wake. Here's the thing. He's a Duke legacy.
Can you imagine him at Duke? I mean, We'll tread carefully here. Just say like,
yeah, I can.
Like a translucent, pasty white boy skin with the like blonde, whatever that is on his
top knot
hair, the hair bun going on. Like him at Duke, he would make J.J. Redick and Grayson Allen look downright likable.
He looks just like Davey.
No offense to the young man, his family. I hope he comes here because then we can.
He not looks like Larry Bird, like a young, skinny Larry Bird.
Yeah, if Davey Hudson and Larry Bird had a baby.
He looks more like Davey Hudson than he does. He looks stunningly Hudson-esque.
Well, except for the fact that he, you know, can shoot incredibly well from three and can also helicopter dunk. I don't think Davey can do that.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on that one.
He's going to end up at Duke, isn't he?
I don't know.
That's a nightmare scenario for me. Blue Kane at Duke cutting down the nets.
I'm no expert. I'm not going to tell Rick Barnes how to run his program, but it's puzzling to me why if Forbes is recruiting him and Duke is kicking the tires. And maybe it's one of those things nowadays where if he just really wants to go to Duke, he can walk on there and make it up through NIL. I don't know. There's different – long way to go. He's rising high school junior. But let's talk about Tennessee.
Yeah.
And the Volunteers today getting a commitment from Cade Phillips. He is the son of John David Phillips, a former Alabama quarterback. He's the nephew of Brody Croyle, another former Alabama quarterback. His grandfather played for the Bear. You couldn't get much more Bama.
No, I mean, this kid's Bama royalty.
Well, for that reason, I actually really, really like it. Because if it's true that Alabama did not go hard after him, you know this kid is going to have a huge chip on his shoulder and is going to want to murder the Tide every time he sees them. And, again, just looking at the paper, 6'9", 210 pounds, Florida State, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, his other main suitors.
I mean, he's a top 100.
Top 100 player, four-star kid.
Bring him on.
Really good player. I pick up major Fulky vibes from this young man.
I think that's the rumor that's what the staff kind of saw in him too.
I'll take another Fulky.
Young Fulky before all the
hopefully
all the catastrophic injuries that he had to endure.
And if 210 is accurate, and I watched a little bit of the film.
I need to go look at the film.
But he looked a little bit thicker than Fulky, and Fulky just never put on any weight. He was always real thin here.
That's one thing I'll give Barnes. The kids are coming in this year, and from BJ to this kid and Phillips and all the rest of these guys, they seem to have a little bit more meat on their bones. A little more physical.
I like that saying, meat on the bone.
Like muscle.
Meat on the bones. Arr. Put some meat on his bones. Who started saying that?
I don't know.
That's weird. The first guy who said that, his friends must have looked at him like, what? Meat on your bones? What?
Meat on the bone.
Bro, that's a weird thing
to say. Probably related to, like a bull, like cattle. A lot of meat on the bone.
Folks, we got Christopher Gabriel coming up this afternoon.
Hurricane warning coming in.
Yep. The CGP, he's got thoughts. He's got takes. He's got stuff to say. Sad news out of Hollywood this afternoon, and I feel like we need to do – Ray Liotta's passing hits hard. 67 years young, Ray Liotta. And, I was looking for such a well-known actor, and his role as Henry Hill in Goodfellas is an iconic film role of the 20th century. And he wasn't in a ton of other stuff.
He was very selective.
He's not prolific as far as output is concerned, but he was very good.
Yeah. Even in the stuff that most people would say is like, might be doing it a little bit for money. He's still really good in that.
Did you see that movie, Unlawful Entry?
Yeah.
Remember Madeline Stowe, like how hot she was back in the early 90s?
Mm-hmm.
That movie, that was a good movie, man. He was so scary in that movie.
Oh, he was absolutely terrifying. Those ice blue eyes.
So just evil looking, and the way he would stalk that couple.
And, dude, he was in, and it was a terrible show. It was on NBC for like a season and a half. It had J-Lo in it, or maybe it was just one season.
What?
It was this show in the past 5 years. It was on NBC. It was him and J-Lo, and but it was still like, I watched every episode just because he was such a great actor, man.
Of course, you wouldn't know, but he was an iconic sports role as well. He played Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams.
That's right.
Which is on the list of awesome things Bear hates, which might require a reading at some point today. It has been a while. But yeah, we'll have to do the full treatment, a Ray Liotta retrospective. We celebrate his entire catalog. Ray Liotta passing away today at the age of 67. So, we got a full one this afternoon. Christopher Gabriel coming up next. Tennessee baseball on the agenda this evening. We'll see. They say they're going to start playing here in an hour or so down there in Hoover. Nothing yet as we watch the SEC Network this afternoon in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Stay with us. The Drive continues. Christopher Gabriel coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. Russell Bear, Jake cruising along with you. Thursday afternoon edition of the show. Welcome to the airways, our friend Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno. Good afternoon, CG. How are you, sir?
Russ, Bear, Jake, gentlemen, it's good to be with you. It is 92 degrees here, going up to an expected high of 98. Yesterday it was 105, and it's always nice when you hear the weather folks say, well, we'll have a cooling trend a little bit later in the week. It's going to get down to 96. 96 for me is not a cooling trend. That's just getting in the broiler and baking.
96 is hot. You guys are already in triple digits out there?
Yeah, it's a little bit earlier than normal. Last year we broke all kinds of records for the most consecutive days of days over 100. And listen, I freely admit it. I'm a Midwest guy. I'm okay with humidity. I know that we walk around, you know, Knoxville's no different. We walk around like wet egg noodles. But give me 80 in humidity over 110, which it got to here last year, 110 and dry. I've said this to you many times, boys. All this garbage, it's a big ruse about how, yeah, it's 110, but you know it's a dry heat. Yeah, but it's 110.
I love the warm weather. That's a little much. That's a little too much for me. Christopher, you know, you're always so optimistic, man. Something sports radio lacks sometimes. And here in Tennessee, Saturday Down South had a tweet earlier this week where they compiled all the wins and losses in all the sports for the 2021-2022 academic calendar year. And they found that Tennessee, surprisingly, far and away, had the highest winning percentage in all sports combined. Now, my question is this. We're always so quick to assign blame when things go poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets the credit here? Danny White has only been here for a year, right? Does Philip Fulmer get the credit? Is it the individual coaches, the players, fans, media? Can Bear and I hang on the rim for this one? What do you say?
It's Danny White. It's Danny White, hands down, and I saw that tweet. I'm going to tell you why. Think of this in terms of a company that has got all the pieces in place to be successful, all of the personnel and whatever it is that they do, but something is missing, and they change CEOs. Or it's a restaurant, and they've got a great chef, and they've got a great staff, but something's not clicking right, and then they get a new GM. And then suddenly the line is forming out the door. Culture starts at the top. You guys and I, we understand this in radio. Culture starts at the top. I've been in stations that were middle of the road and then got a new program director or a new operations manager. And within two or three ratings books, we were number one because you had the pieces in place. You had the format. Everything was solid. In the case of Tennessee, you've got the facilities. They're there. The fan base is there. They needed some direction. They needed some focusing. And Danny White has brought an enthusiasm, a vitality, an energy, and an edginess that Tennessee athletics has lacked for a long time. And I'm not really so much knocking I am knocking people ahead of him. But let's just not kid ourselves. I'm knocking Fulmer. I'm knocking Mike Hamilton. Curry, let's not even get into that. And I'm knocking Doug Dickey. You know, I'm one of the people who was not a big fan of Doug Dickey, as I've told you. But I think there was a lot of winning going on in football down at UCF. Danny White got people on the same page. He had a remarkable, and you remember, right, fellas? You had me on pretty much the day after Danny was hired, and I've never wavered on this. I said to you flat out, you and Bear, that this was a home run, a grand slam hire, because of all the things that we have seen. And I realize that people will say, yeah, well, you know, hey, Chris, this is a voicemail that I got at the station. How many coaches has he hired? Well, that's missing the mark, fellas, because it's not just about hiring coaches. It's about how many times have great athletic directors hired coaches that didn't work out? What's happened is he has refocused everybody's sensibilities there into a different area. I'll give you one more parallel. You know, Tennessee, this winning percentage is fantastic. But the Vols, as a program, and I mean, I've been following Tennessee sports my entire life. That's, you know, I don't want to date myself, but we're talking close to five decades. And when it gets to the biggest moment, far too often, a Tennessee team, I don't care if we're talking football or tennis, has seen the spotlight on the stage, but has walked to the spotlight and not been able to get into the spotlight. Whereas, look at the schools out here, and I'm going to give you three, USC, UCLA, and Stanford. Each of those schools have over 100 team NCAA team championships. And granted, the vast majority of those are in Olympic sports. We used to call them non-revenue sports. But that doesn't matter, because there's still tournaments for tennis and water polo and golf and so on. And those schools' programs always step into the light. And because in almost every case, they've had great athletic directors. And I think, guys, that's what we have now on the Hill. Now we've got a guy that has tasted success. He knows how to get fundraising going. He knows how to get facilities built, facilities renovated. He knows how to hire. And I think we have seen that. If there's a number that we can attach to Danny White, it's this number, this winning percentage. And let me just say this. I tend to be a glass half full guy. But if you guys were doing the drive, or maybe you were, I don't remember, 10 years ago, you would have heard me as energized, but in an opposite way. You would have heard me lambasting Tennessee athletics for all the things that we were doing wrong. So it's thrilling to be able to come on and say, no, we're doing things right now, because the culture of the fans has changed too, hasn't it? I mean, you've got to feel it there. And I've said this on your program before, where you have fans that are all, well, yeah, we just won such and such, but there's always a but, right? There's always a but. And I said this last night, you know, on a show, and I've said this on Twitter forever, and I've said this on your show, guys, that it's time for the fans to suck it up and get out of this woe is us mentality. It's time to suck it up and remember, this is Tennessee, and Tennessee is used to winning. Tennessee doesn't have, you know, 70 or 80 or 90 team NCAA championships, but they've got national championships. They have individual national championships. We certainly have plenty of SEC championships, and I think that we've rounded the corner, guys, and I think the best is yet to come.
Well, Chris, you said a lot there. I'm just still – my head is spinning over Doug Dickey catching a stray in Christopher Gabriel's opening salvo this afternoon on the show. Did not see that one coming.
Well, you know, I met Doug once, and he was one of the most gracious people I ever had a chance to meet down there in terms of the athletic department. He wouldn't remember me now, but I mean, he was always so kind to me. But there were things that went on under his watch that I was not a fan of. And I didn't, you know, even things like when Kentucky would come into Thompson Bowling and I'd come in for a game. And this was back when, you know, we were really struggling. And Doug, you know that it came from Doug. Well, I know this for a fact, where you'd see souvenir stands with as much or more Kentucky merchandise. Like, what the hell's going on here? This is a Tennessee game. We're not in Lexington. We're not at Rupp Arena. But I felt like it was more about making the money and making sure we had some good coin coming in, and let's get those Kentucky fans to buy some blue and white while they're down in good old Knoxville. Little things like that that bug me. There's a lot of things that bug me. I felt like the athletic department as a whole, under Doug Dickey, didn't take enough chances, played it safe too often, and played the whole, you know, we got to have a Tennessee man or a Tennessee woman. There's nothing wrong with that, but sometimes it's not a bad thing to go outside the family.
Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno, with us this afternoon on the show. Christopher, how much of, we talk about these good vibes in the program, how much of it all gets back to football? We're all talking about a program that finished 7-6 last year, and you know as good as I do that if Tennessee stumbles, if they lose to Pitt, Florida, LSU out of the gate, any combination, or God forbid all three of those teams, people are not going to be happy. No matter what the other sports are doing. I know it's ridiculous to say there's pressure on Josh Heupel going into his second season. But, Chris, this is the SEC. It's cutthroat. What do you need to see this fall to confirm that everything you just said about Tennessee being on the right track is true?
Oh, Russ, I think you're absolutely right. There is pressure on Josh Heupel. I think you nailed it. And you're right. It goes to football. I mean, look, I'll use schools out here again as an example. I mean, I can use schools in your area, but I see them all the time out here. You go down to USC, I don't care that they won the beach volleyball national championship. They can win national championships. When I was at SC, you know, I went to SC. Biggest mistake of my life, not coming to Tennessee. That's another story. My first year at SC, 5 national championships. The only reason the other ones were noticed was because football was one of them. Everything surrounds around football. At Oregon, it used to be, believe it or not, everything surrounded around Hayward Track before they renovated the place, and now it's football. At Tennessee, yeah, it all revolves around football, and psychologists, therapists in Knoxville and Alcoa and Sevierville and Murfreesboro and getting further out, they're going to be doing great business this fall if the Vols stumble against Pittsburgh or, heaven forbid, Ball State. So there is a lot of pressure on him. But let's remember, this is a guy who was, you know, who was a Heisman guy. This is a guy who was the starting quarterback at Oklahoma. This is a guy who has been a prolific offensive coordinator and a head coach who went 28-8 at UCF. This is a guy that he may not show it because he's just a, you know, he's got kind of a aw shucks look on his face, right? And he's a little subtle and relaxed, and he looks laid back, and he's going to be kind of the introvert in the corner and just, you know, eating a burger, and maybe his pinky fingers are up. The hell with that. Okay, he has got a killer mentality. He not only wants to drop 50 on somebody, he wants to beat teams by 50. So I believe he's coming out expecting to go into the Alabama game in Knoxville 5-0. There's pressure on this team to not just beat Ball State. How many times have we watched a Ball State come into Knoxville? Or, oh, I don't know, how about a BYU or a Georgia State coming in, and it's the fourth quarter, and it's 27-24, or they're losing. They need to bury Ball State. They need to go to Pitt, and they need to bring 20,000. If I could get there, I would. There should be 20,000 to 25,000 Vols fans in there. I don't like to say should have, but man, we should have beaten Pitt last year. They need to go into Pitt, into Heinz Field, and beat the hell out of them. They're going to beat Akron. Florida, don't get me started. I know that everybody wants to put Billy Napier like just an eyelash away from Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. Just stop. Okay, but a guy who's closer to that, even though he's still far away, is our guy, Josh Heupel. If there was ever a year to finally get it going against Florida, this is the one. LSU, I mean, I think if you're asking me, if you're, you know, there's subtweets, if your sub-question was, if your subtext was, what do I think the Vols are going to do this year? I think the Vols are going to go 9-3. And they should go 9-3, and they really could go 10-2. They're not going to beat Alabama. I mean, it's a great thought, but Alabama's just still too much. But I think the game's going to be competitive. I think the fans are going to be hungry. I think they're going to probably lose to Georgia. And then, guys, I think they're going to lose one more game somewhere that they're not expecting to lose. Is it going to be South Carolina? I don't know. LSU, that's a tough environment, but there's no reason why the Vols, if they play to their potential on paper, if we see growth from last year, if we see Hendon Hooker on target for deep balls, and if he was on target, I love Hendon, but if he was on target with deep balls last year, they would have won two or three more games. He will be this year. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he will be on target this year, then they beat LSU. So I think the expectations need to be high, Russ. Later for this crap about, well, you know, we play better with a chip on our shoulder. Just stop with that. You know, that's for the Kentuckys, okay? That's for the Ole Misses. That's for the Mississippi State. You go to the Big Ten, that's for Purdue and Indiana. That's not for Tennessee. Tennessee should go in expecting to win, and then, you know, if they don't beat a team that they should beat by 30 or 40, if they don't beat them by 30 or 40, then that should be considered, well, we're happy, but we should have beaten them by more. So I think there's pressure on Josh Heupel. I think that he is up to the moment, and I think he has a team that is going to be up to the moment.
Christopher Gabriel, KMJ Fresno, our guest this afternoon on The Drive. And Chris, the SEC spring meetings kick off next week in Destin. All eyes, of course, are going to be on Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Christopher, you followed the SEC for a long time. You know, as we all do, that teams have been buying recruits for years, for decades. But now that it's all out in the open, and we have sitting head coaches, both of whom have championship credentials, accusing each other of cheating while denying that they themselves are doing exactly what they're accusing the other of doing. How do you handle this if you're Greg Sankey? Do you tell the both of them to shut it and pretend everything is just peachy? Or is there something that can be done to fix what many perceive to be an out-of-control market for high school football talent?
Yeah, I think the first call that Greg Sankey makes is to Vince McMahon. And just, you know, brings him down.
Celebrity deathmatch.
Yeah, I think, why not? But I mean, in all seriousness, you know, there's a couple different roads that Greg Sankey can go here. And I think he has to tread, not lightly, but I think he has to tread carefully. Because the SEC is obviously the dominant conference when it comes to football. Big Ten fans like to think otherwise, and they're misguided. The SEC is head and shoulders above everybody else. But the problem is that these two guys, Jimbo and Saban, they have exacerbated a perception that is also a reality. And now you have both perception and reality mixing, and that is a dangerous cocktail. I think Greg Sankey, I think he needs to get the two of them in a room and say, fellas, we need to put the conference first. And you need to stop doing, you're basically fitting into the stereotype or the generalization, I should say, that every other fan from P5 schools around the country, not named an SEC team, are buying into. I think they both need to dial it back because, for number one, for Saban clearly doesn't like that his competitive edge is gone. And, you know, when he initially went and said, I think the whole NIL thing is out of control, et cetera, that's just a bunch of nonsense. Saban doesn't want anybody else to be playing in his sandbox. So that's why he came out and, you know, and I'm sure he would love Congress to kind of step in and reel this all in. But back to your question, I think Sankey needs to get these two guys on the same page and say, listen, we need to come up with something here that sounds credible, that sounds like we've all made peace. And let's talk about our own team. Let's talk about the rivalries. Let's talk about the greatness of the conference. Let's talk about everything that we're doing that is making the rest of college football come up to our level, or at least try to get to our level. We don't need to be beating on each other anywhere but the field. I do think that as entertaining as the Jimbo Saban battle has been, I do think that it becomes about unintended consequences. And it becomes counterproductive. I'm curious what you think, Russ, because I think there's more damage that can be done than good with the two of them going at it.
I disagree a little bit, Chris. I'm any publicity is good publicity thing. I think that people just look at this as entertainment. They like it. They like to see the sniping. And I think that when you talk about parody, here's another thing that was so obnoxious about Saban and his calls for parody. A guy who has pretty much eliminated parody from the sport over the past 20 years or so is there's not parody in the SEC. There's not parody in college football. And it has sucked a lot of the fun out of it, I think, for a lot of people. And I don't feel the pop. You know what I mean when I say pop, Christopher? As a talk radio host, you feel it. This is what the people want to talk about. I don't feel that for college football the way I did 10, 20 years ago. And so from my perspective, anything that adds color, that adds intrigue, that adds drama to the sport in the month of May, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think your point is well taken. It's my turn to disagree with you a little bit, and that's about any publicity is good publicity, but understand I don't agree with that, but understand my frame of reference. I grew up in a restaurant family in Chicago, and I'm here to tell you, bad publicity is the death of a restaurant,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
There's an old adage in the restaurant industry, great food, miserable service, you're not going back. Average food, great service, you're going to give the place another chance. So that's where I'm coming from. But I think your point is well taken. When I saw the parody comment, I was all over that on social media. I don't know what he's talking about. That's just nonsense. But I think you make a really great point when you say you're not feeling the pop, because the pop that I'm feeling, Russ, has been more for, well, how much is this guy going to get in NIL money? How much is what? Do we have a chance? Do we have enough money to pay this guy? That's not the pop that I want to hear. I'm glad that Tennessee's getting some guys, but I want to hear something a little bit different. The reason I think that too much of the Saban Jimbo thing is negative is because I worry that this gets people with a national platform, and we know the writers. I mean, Pat Forty, we have Klatt, the broadcaster, Joel Klatt, you have Stuart Mandel, you have guys with big audiences and big followings, and they like nothing more than to not only rip Tennessee, but to rip the SEC if possible, because certainly all of them are holier than thou, and they follow teams that, you know, that are all above board and everything is great and squeaky clean, even though they don't win anything. You know, 40 should just stick to writing about Stanford swimming and just leave it at that. So that's where I get a little concerned, Russ, that the fun that we have, and it has been fun, watching these two guys, these two great coaches, go at each other, that is there a point that it gets, we get to the apex, right? We get to the top of the mountain, and now it's becoming a little counterproductive. That's where my concern is at.
Well, it should be an interesting offseason in the SEC and college football. Yeah, we'll see. But I don't know. Maybe an arm wrestling match can settle it. Maybe they can have, I don't know, a game of Jeopardy.
Cornhole,
a chess match, something. But at the end of the day, they got to shake hands and leave it behind them, right? At least until the fall.
You would think so. I mean, that game right now, I mean, how many of, I know I circled it. I mean, how many folks circled that game on their calendar? I mean, what is it, October 2nd? It's the week before our game, isn't it, with Bama?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man, how great is that? Bama's going to come in either furious or, having a great time with that. By the way, has it stopped raining in Hoover?
I was going to say, yeah, we're about to play baseball. Florida and A&M are on the field. There's standing pools of water all over the warning track. I think they're just going to play this game underwater partially.
Hey, what do you think, and I know this is your interview, so I apologize, but what do you think? I'm of the opinion that even though this has been a great season, because the Vols have been so great, and they have really reset the bar, the fact that they're hated and they're the villains, I love that. It's about time that a Tennessee team has swag and can back it up. I believe that this year has become, if you don't win the national championship, it, it, it's just, you know, it was on some level a fail.
I don't feel that way, Christopher. I think a lot of Tennessee fans probably do. I think just getting to Omaha is so hard. You never know who you're going to run into in the regional or the super regional. Just getting there would be a great season in my mind. I would like to win a game if they get there rather than just get smoked twice like we did last year. But I think, you know, just getting there is good enough for me. Anything beyond that is gravy. It's just such a hard sport, and you have to be hot at the right time.
You know, Russ, you know I love you like a brother. I do. You know I do, and you know, but one of the rare moments, I could not disagree with that more.
Okay.
Could not disagree with that more, because from my perspective, I wish I was sitting in the studio with you right now. From my perspective, the problem with Tennessee athletics has been we have been too happy to get somewhere. We made the tournament, guys. We can't expect any more. Hey, we got to Omaha. Hey, we got to the SEC championship game. This kind of goes back to what I was saying about when you have the USC's, UCLA's, Stanford's, and Florida or Alabama. They get to the moment and they seize the moment. So, Russ, so it's a respectful disagreement for me. They've been to Omaha 5 times. This should be the 6th time. And I, quite frankly, I'm tired of just getting to Omaha. It's time to get to Omaha and win the damn thing.
Interesting. Interesting. And that's all. You're always the guy to push the envelope. Expect more. Set the bar higher. All that stuff. You might be right. You've given us something to ponder here during the break and for the next segment. Christopher, we got to run, though, man. I love you. Appreciate you jumping on, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend out there in blistering hot California.
Yeah, yes, sir. You guys, too. You know I love you guys coming on the show. Your fans, your audience is terrific. My best to everybody in East Tennessee. Have a marvelous and safe Memorial Day weekend. Until we meet again, boys, we will do this again.
Thanks, Christopher. Appreciate it, man. I think Christopher Gabriel just questioned my give a darn. Right there.
Yeah, I mean, he straight up calls you out, dude.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe it needed to happen. I don't. I think we can thread this needle a little bit. I think you do, and we know Vitello. Those guys, if they do make it to Omaha, will go there expecting to win.
Well,
like
they
expect to win every time they roll out of bed. The thing here's maybe I've got a little bit of basketball and Barnes bashing fatigue here. But because I see what happens in that sport, and we set the bar high. I just want to go to the Final Four. I just want to go there. Just want to take it further than we've ever done. And then when it doesn't happen, people turn on the coach. They say the season's a failure, and we get into this all-or-nothing mentality. And I don't want to see that happen in baseball.
No.
So and here's something we can ponder during the break is – can you thread that needle? Can you say that we're going to Omaha and we're going to win – And that's the goal. That's the objective, is to win the whole bleeping thing, as Jake Taylor said in Major League, while still saying, if we don't, because only one of 8 teams is going to win there, and the percentages are clearly against you. If you don't, it doesn't mean that the season was a failure.
No, that's...
that's the point I'm trying to make.
That's... honestly, and I love Chris, but when he says stuff like that... I mean, whenever he does finally come into town,
but I don't want
to take him over into the, you know, to where my buddies hang out, the miserable guys.
Yes,
he says like a couple of times he said the same thing I hear from those guys, Legion of the Miserable. He's got some Legion in him,
don't we all? Stay with us. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. Back with more after this. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. 865-546-8200, your number to get up with us here this afternoon, Thursday afternoon edition of the show. We are underway in Hoover. Got baseball being played before dozens and dozens of fans.
This looks like just a mess down there. That field's completely saturated.
They've had a lot of rain down there.
Do you imagine how uncomfortable it is and humid?
Oh yeah,
wearing those uniforms.
Yeah, not great. Not great, Bob.
A lot of chafing. Slimy feeling.
That's why you need our friends at Manscaped.
Well done. Well done, Jake. Get a little bit of that ball powder on you.
That deodorant.
All right. So we asked the question before the break, as it looks like we're going to see Tony V and the boys back out there again tonight. It'll be a late one, but it's looking promising that we're going to play Vanderbilt tonight. Big rivalry game. We'll all be up late watching it together on Twitter. We might have to do a little emergency Twitter spaces after the game. I mean, if we get our tails kicked,
we'll just disappear into the night. But if we win, I'd look
for
us.
Pour some salt on the wound for the Vandy boys.
Yeah.
Vandy boys.
God, I can't stand them. Just hate them. Just so obnoxious.
Dude, I got to tell you, man, I'm playing hurt today, all right?
What'd you do, bite yourself?
Yes.
Inside of your cheek?
My tongue. Last night, I'm driving home from our kids, the baseball game, right? And I have the worst, like, just allergy. Jake, have you ever had, or it just comes on and you can't stop sneezing?
Yeah, after the Smokies game we went to.
I'm driving my car home. And I just start, like, I can't, like, for, it felt like 10 minutes. It was probably only about 5 minutes. And I sneezed at least, like, no lie, at least a dozen times. Like, just sneeze, rest, sneeze. Like, it was awful, man. And I'm just.
Been there.
At one point, I sneeze. And I'm like, you know, tears running down my eye, like, nose running. Like, just a mess, man. Just an absolute mess.
Ready to go into a bubble.
Yeah. And I sneezed so hard that I somehow bit my tongue.
What?
Like on the back of it too, not on the tip, like,
yeah, like right back here.
Yeah, and it's all swollen up now and it hurts when I speak. I'm whining, but I just kind of re-aggravated the injury, so
I think you'll be okay there.
No, I understand exactly what you're going through.
You feel me?
You're in pain.
You feel me?
It happens.
What do you guys think? What is the ultimate goal here for this baseball team? Can you have a great season? Can this be a successful season without winning the whole darn thing? Christopher Gabriel says that's the goal. Anything less should be, I don't know if he said should be considered a failure, but that's kind of the implication. It's like, no. We need to have that mindset. We needed that attitude. That's how the big boys do it. Have we really just, has it been so long since we've been the big boys that we've just forgotten what that mentality is?
No, it's just that for me, I hear, like, he said a couple of things, like, word for word, that, you know, like I was telling you, some of my friends, the all or nothing crew that I know, those guys, I mean, like, word for word. It was like, you know.
He does it nicer, though. You notice how, like,
sophisticated.
When he disagrees with me, he's like, I would like to respectfully disagree. Like, he's smooth like that.
He's a professional.
Those guys, he's like, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. And then they hang up on you. And then they're like, mad. You get feelings hurt.
And they won't call us for 3 or 4 days.
It's a little bit different with Christopher Gabriel, so I can respect that. I can have a conversation with that.
If we lose the world, if we don't win the World Series, it's a failure. It's just, it's a bridge too far for me.
I'm not there. I want to win it. And here's the way, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we think. We will judge and pontificate and decide whether or not we feel it was a successful season or not when it's all said and done. Obviously, if they win, it's a moot point because we all agree. But it will be subjective at some level if they don't win, whether or not it was a successful season. And I suppose at the end of the day, we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. But I know this. It doesn't matter what our mentality is because I know what the team's mentality is because it comes from their head coach. He's going to go expecting the win, and if they don't, he's going to have the red ass about it. I mean, I remember, like, talking to him for weeks in the summer after last season, and he was pissed. He's probably still pissed about it. If you ask him about Omaha, like,
we're not bringing that up.
Really upset.
I mean, Marcus might, but I wouldn't.
All right, we got Jamie Utah wants to chime in. We'll give him the floor when we continue. Jake's got your top four at four as well. The Drive Fan Run Radio, live on a Thursday, hour number two, coming up.